Tales from the Jazz Age by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Narrated by Kenneth Elliott. Unclassified Masterpieces. The Lees of Happiness. 1. If you should look through the files of old magazines for the first years of the present century, you would find, sandwiched in between the stories of Richard Harding Davis and Frank Norris and others long since dead, the word of one Jeffrey Curtin. A novel or two and perhaps three or four dozen short stories. You could, if you were interested, follow them along until, say, 1908, when they suddenly disappeared. When you had read them all, you would have been quite sure that here were no masterpieces. Here were passably amusing stories, a bit out of date now, but doubtless the sort that would then have whiled away a dreary half hour in a dental office. The man who did them was of good intelligence, talented, glib, probably young. In the samples of his work you found, there would have been nothing to stir you to more than a faint interest in the whims of life. No deep interior laughs, no sense of futility or hint of tragedy. After reading them, you would yawn and put the number back in the files, and perhaps, if you were in some library reading room, you would decide that by way of variety, you would look at a newspaper of the period and see whether the Japs had taken Port Arthur. But if by any chance the newspaper you had chosen was the right one and had crackled open at the theatrical page, your eyes would have been arrested and held, and for at least a minute you would have forgotten Port Arthur as quickly as you forgot Chateau Thierry, for you would, by this fortunate chance, be looking at the portrait of an exquisite woman. Those were tie days of Floridora and of sextets, a pinched-in waists and blown-out sleeves of almost bustled and absolute ballet skirts, but here, without doubt, disguised as she might be by the unaccustomed stiffness and old fashion of her costume, was a butterfly of butterflies. Here was the gaiety of the period, the soft wine of eyes, the songs that flurried hearts, the toasts and tie bouquets, the dances and the dinners. Here was a Venus of the handsome, Cab, the Gibson girl, in her glorious prime. Here was you. Find by looking at the name beneath, one Roxanne Milbank, who had been chorus girl and understudy in the Daisy Chain, but who, by reason of an excellent performance when the star was indisposed, had gained a leading part. You would look again and wonder why you had never heard of her. Why did her name not linger in popular songs and vaudeville jokes and cigar bands, and the memory of that gay old uncle of yours, along with Lillian Russell and Stella Mayhew, and Anna Held? Roxanne Milbank, whither had she gone? What dark trapdoor had opened suddenly and swallowed her up? Her name was certainly not in last Sunday's supplement on the list of actresses married to English noblemen. No doubt she was dead, poor beautiful young lady, and quite forgotten. I am hoping too much. I am having you stumble on Jeffrey Curtin's stories and Roxanne Milbank's picture. It would be incredible that you should find a newspaper item 6 months later, a single item 2 inches by 4, which informed the public of the marriage, very quietly, of Miss Roxanne Milbank, who had been on tour with the Daisy Chain to Jeffrey Curtin, the popular author. Mrs. Curtin, it added dispassionately, will retire from the stage. It was a marriage of love. He was sufficiently spoiled to be charming. She was ingenious enough to be irresistible. Like two floating logs, they met in a head-on rush, caught, and sped along together. Yet had Jeffrey Curtin kept at scrivening for 20 years, he could not have put a quirk into one of his stories weirder than the quirk that came into his own life. Had Roxanne Milbank played 36 parts and filled 5,000 houses, she could never have had a role with more happiness and more despair than were in the fate prepared for Roxanne Curtin. For a year they lived in hotels, traveled to California, to Alaska, to Florida, to Mexico, loved and quarreled gently, and gloried in the golden triflings of his wit with her beauty. They were young and gravely passionate. They demanded everything and then yielded everything again in ecstasies of unselfishness and pride. She loved